Well, I did a great job on our toast today. So
I think it's I think that's a good start.
Did you get a one piece toast?
I did, but it came with two because it was an accident.
Because of an accident.
Mm-hmm. Either that, or they're trying to hook me up.
They're just
the
giving away thousands of dollars every day in unordered toast.
Shout out to Thousands, our new brand, Thousands. Mm-hmm,
I like it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We got a Disney trip on the books. Where should I go get coffee in Anaheim?
Specifically Anaheim?
Or just around. I went to that Hidden House place.
Yeah, I like the Santa Ana one a lot.
Yeah.
Where did it just
go? Is there anywhere else down there?
We went to that place where they're building the train tracks last time. When we took all the crew.
Yeah, that's, I don't want to call him Severus.
Severus.
Severus Snape's place.
Voldemort and Severus. Open a shop.
Hopper and Burr.
Hopper and Burr. Yeah, something.
I mean,
something,
you've
right?
been oh, there. Yeah. That's fun. I mean, they're...
Does Truman still own that place? Uh-huh.
He's got a speakeasy down there.
I would go to that.
He's got it. I forget what it's called, but I can find out for you.
Nice.
I feel like I had coffee.
Where's Steelhead from there?
Well, they're in Long Beach.
That's
a little bit out of the way unless he decides to take the roundabout trip.
Steelhead's cool, though. I'd go there. Well, I like their container store. That's the only one I've been to, so I don't know the other ones.
I mean, Colossus Bread, too. That's their sister... Not their sister, but their old homie and our old homie's place. That's all kind of like just over, closer to the coast. Anaheim proper?
Not much.
I'm blanking. I think so. Some yummy food, but yeah. All sorts of, I had some really good Mexican food when I was down there. I got it on DoorDash after the first place. Literally, they got there and they're like, did you already get your order? And I'm like, no, dude, it's late. I'm hungry. And they're like, says they gave it to somebody. And so I was like, got them to refund me and ordered from somewhere else. And it turned out to be baller. It was good. They had like ribeye tacos that were, it was good. Anyway.
Dude, I'm feeling
food.
It.
When are you good. Going?
Next
That's
month.
Soon. Okay.
Yeah.
May?
Yeah.
You put like Eleanor on the.
Absolutely.
Like the drops.
For sure. I'll put her on
Guardians
anything.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Dude.
If she's tall enough, which she's not, but I'll put her on.
No, it's just like accompanied by an adult.
She'll be pumped. That's not how it works at all.
Guardians of the Galaxy. She's all...
Yeah, she's going to be fully juiced, man.
Yeah, I think... I can't remember right there in Anaheim what's going down or near there. I mean, there's definitely coffee in the Santa Ana area, but...
Hit us up, Anaheim coffee folks.
Yeah, dude.
Hit
up
George. Hit him. Yeah.
His phone number is 555-555-555-555-345.
Area code 556789. Dude, I can't wait.
Remember that one time you did an Instagram post with my address on it?
What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you remember that?
No.
Oh, very quick.
We were like shipping. Maybe it was way back in the day, like maybe when we were doing stuff out of Santa Barbara, and you did a post of like a box going out, but it had like my home personal address.
I think it was in the video, though. It wasn't like full on just the post. It was like, but in the process, you're all, yo, that had my address on it.
Oh, whoops. Got to get rid of that one.
Yeah, you switched it out real quick.
People are sending stuff. Dude, did you hear that White Ivy's back?
Yeah, dude.
No.
When
Tell
I
me
started
more.
Balling, I was young.
So Jared has an old White Ivy email address
because
he is
that.
White Iverson,
yes,
right? And it was on
Before.
Something to do
Post.
With Shopify or ShipStation
when
we first opened. So when all of the subscriptions went out, even though we had already created Cat and Cloud email addresses, people would get their invoice in the box and it would say, you know, Cat and Cloud, 3600 Portola. And then the email was White Ivy, like at hotmail.com or whatever. And
we got
a real business here, I promise.
Yeah. So my back in the day, Thad, my brother-in-law, was like, what is this White Ivy? And I was like, oh, I don't even know. I never even looked. I was like, oh, yeah, it's Jared's. It snuck
Origin
in there.
Story.
So we fixed White Ivy. 2 weeks ago, he sends me a text with a screenshot. White Ivy is back. And somehow, White Ivy worked its way back into being the from email for our subscription.
I wonder how that happened. Geez.
It must be something with recharge.
Mm-hmm.
So we have everything in... Shopify and ShipStation is one thing, but Recharge is like this third-party plugin app. So sometimes one of the most annoying things about web and web plugins is any one of the plugins we use, which we use a few of them, they'll just update their whole thing, and then we have to go in and make sure that that's communicating well with the other apps and Shopify, and sometimes it's easy and sometimes it just doesn't want to do anything. Yeah. And it's just obnoxious. So that's probably Recharge, like, probably reset. Updated something. So now all of a
sudden it's like, Shopify, get your shit together. Just provide.
They have it. We just don't want to pay for it.
No, just provide like a subscription. Like, that's why we use Recharge, because Shopify doesn't provide like a subscription.
They must have one now, right? They must have one now.
Yeah, look, I mean,
I feel like Shopify has a lot of things, but every time we try to go to the next level, it's just such a big jump. You know, it's thousands of dollars.
It's just,
and we're like, no.
The return.
Thousands. I need to do this, Chuck. How much is it going to be? Everything's thousands of dollars.
That's probably true. That's actually like, probably
everything
true.
Is thousands of dollars.
Money is no option. It's at least thousands.
It's at least thousands. Couples.
Money buys nothing.
Yeah. But yeah, White Ivy's back, everybody.
Good. I like it.
That's fair, man.
Then Jared a couple
emails.
I didn't
know if we're getting some jerseys printed. See it pop up.
That'd be great. We should get some sick jerseys. There's so many jersey options out there. Didn't Weiser start working on jerseys?
I don't know if he started doing jerseys. I think that was more of an idea.
Yeah, maybe he didn't actually do it. He was throwing out concepts.
Pretty heavy merch stack coming out, though.
People would definitely buy basketball jerseys from us.
They
always offer to buy the ones that we had for City League.
And should I, that one you gave me, maybe I should put it on eBay, see what it gets.
Yeah.
Let me get you some. Something
original White Ivy.
Let's get it into thousands of dollar range, guys.
Can you?
This
can
is a collectible.
No, it's a collectible.
It's a literally the only one that you can get. That's not
game worn.
It's not claimed. You know what I mean?
It might be game worn.
Maybe not.
I don't know if it was game worn.
No, I think it's brand new.
I think that's I think that was just for Chris.
Feels like a brand new one.
So you can also buy White Ivy. Somebody thinks it's like Iverson.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have Jared sign it for you.
Except for he's never ever gone by White Ivy. Iverson has never pulled that off in any sort of way. But yeah. They'll probably think it's Post Malone. I'm like, yeah, dude. They're like, no, dude, this is pre-Post Malone. I helped him, dude.
Super down.
I let him have it.
All the coffee's good for SCA. Been tasting them.
Yeah. Pablo Chacon. I got Pablo?
Definitely not.
Pablo Chacon. No.
What is it Chacon? Pablo Chacon? It is Pablo Chacon. I'm not tripping, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that was
no,
weird.
No, not Pablo, though.
That's what I'm saying. What's the first name? That threw me off, and now I'm like super out of it. Anyway.
He's just going to start listing Latin names. He's all
That coffee I have to taste today, and we may roast one more round of that. But everything else is tasting fantastic. Why am I blinking? I set myself off on that one.
Me
see,
out.
Told you. Well, whatever, man. Anyway, we'll taste that one more time.
Francisco.
Francisco Chacon. That's right. That's better.
Go. I didn't want to make a claim. Yeah. Oh, dude. Check this out. You guys ready to get into the age-old question?
Depends on it. Sure, man.
From our homie, Zach Bachmeyer.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Sent me a text yesterday, which I, of course, didn't reply to. Super random, but I was reading about washed, semi-washed, and natural drying process this morning.
Mm.
What method do you prefer and why?
Mm.
It's a big question. That's why I couldn't really text him back.
So not I don't, a one-line answer?
Yeah. I don't know if anybody's got any favorites.
I mean, yeah.
I like them for different reasons.
Yeah.
Right? I like them all, but each. That's my non-answer.
That's your non-answer answer.
I'll just say it. I'm washed for sure. 1,000%.
Yeah. I would say 90% of the time, I favor washed coffees. But I can't tell if that's because naturals go bad so quickly.
Right. Because a really, really good natural is really, really nice.
And it's really, really rare.
Yeah.
In. You know what I mean? It's
yeah. I mean, they're good. Really, really good.
The funny thing
but they're also sort of the same when you get the really, really good ones.
False.
Not false.
Definitely
not false at
there's
all.
There's
always kind of the same kind of fruit.
Taste the rainbow,
I
my
know,
friend.
But they're all still kind of, you still go into that route where it's like the best ones, like your Los Lajones Natural is like a specific version of it, but it's still kind of the same.
I mean, for you.
That's what I'm
that's
saying.
Just what
that's why it's my
like,
opinion about right?
him. So you're saying that the processing method dominates like the variety and the other terroir of the coffee.
And there is some like nuance to that processing portion of it, I think, that makes them extra, extra good. Like it can be more mango-y. But I mean, even like the Green Tip Naturals to me, like they're still kind of all living in that. Like, in fact, to that point, in my opinion, it's just... The Green Tip Natural feels very similar to that Los Lajones Natural in flavor, but even though they're slightly different, like it just kind of all fits in this box more specifically. I think you get way more nuance out of Wash coffees.
Those two coffees.
You just gotta think outside the box.
Those two coffees are interesting.
I've been doing this for a long time, Chuck.
Because, so Los Lajones, so they're both, those are both geisha.
They are both.
And I'm, I'll say 95, but I'm like basically 100% sure that the Los Lajones is a transplant from somewhere in
Panama.
Boquete.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was.
So
I'm
they're like
sure
basically the same plants.
Just different.
Same. So they grew in different soil,
yeah,
but it's like same varietal and even same like literal fucking, like they're in the family.
Yeah.
They're in that zone.
Which I understand would give you like a, that's why they taste closer together.
Right.
In flavor, sure. Ish, depending on the processing style and like how well they did.
Sure. I mean, yeah.
But I mean, that'd just be like, cool, like all fruit tastes the same.
No, it doesn't.
Is like what you're
saying.
Because
it's still coffee.
If you're natural. But if natural, it's like, dude, all Skittles taste the same. Is what you're saying.
That's not working at all.
Yeah,
tell me this. Do all peaches taste like peaches?
Do all naturals, they're all different types of fruit.
But they're not. They're all coffee.
But the terroir and how it's processed can lead to like how we taste it as different types of fruit, just in the same way that Skittles, right? It's like the whole rainbow of flavors.
Yeah.
Naturals can produce a whole rainbow of different flavors. They don't all taste.
I agree with
that's
most,
all. That's all.
That.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with some of that, but it's still coffee cherry. So that's where I go, where it's like
it's all coffee.
But all the washed coffees are also just coffee cherry.
Agreed.
Right.
But I think the washed allows you to taste more nuance. And more
right,
excitement.
And then that's what I enjoy in the washed is the like an actual washed that has a lot of complexity to it, that has like layered complexity. Like that's what I really enjoy in washed coffee.
Totally, I agree. Yeah, I think that's why washed are for you're able to find more complexity and clarity in them most of the time. And then the really good naturals, they're really fun and delicious and unique, but still. If you were to line up all the naturals, I don't know. I mean, I think you can find washed coffees that get more in the fruity range than you would find naturals that get into the clean range. If you were, for me.
I mean, natural processing is just more of a dice roll for most people. And I think that's why generally I prefer washed, because natural can go wrong so easily.
Seems like it.
A lot of the coffees, actually, here's my big beef with naturals. Naturals are this great thing where people love the, and I love this too. So I once was like you, where I remember being at Stumptown, you know, doing cuppings at the Annex, and you've got all these nice, really clean washed coffees, and then you got some naturally processed Sodomo or something. And if you've never smelled or tasted anything like that, it just jumps off the table.
Like,
and it's immediately identifiable. You're like, oh, that tastes like, or that smells like blueberry pie, or that smells like some kind of Pop-Tart or something. It's just really fruity.
Yeah,
it's really sweet. And you're tasting not so much the nuance of the coffee, but you're kind of tasting a lot of the processing, the byproducts of the
something.
Processing method.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's these trends in coffee where naturals will catch fire. Now it's, you know, anaerobics probably the thing, but something will start to trend because it pops out in a certain way. And then it's really easy to pass off crappier versions of that
while
as
trend is
good.
Hot.
While the trend is hot, because at a base level, most people are just tasting that one base thing,
sure.
Whether that's, oh, it tastes like fruit, it tastes like pie, it, you know, it tastes like blueberries. That's it. And, it, you know, we've been to cuppings where there's like the gnarliest, dirtiest, naturally processed coffee in a room full of people, and people are just like, this one's awesome, this one's the best. And it's like, I get what you're saying. It's not the best.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really fruity. And maybe that's kind of new for you, and you like it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where my beef with the naturals are. It's just like, pull the wool over your eyes. It tastes like fruit. And people are buying just shitty ass naturals, and I can't I can't hang, you know what I mean? And the same thing's happening right now with anaerobic. You're like, try this anaerobic coffee. And I'm just like, dude, whoa, this tastes like garbage. Like, you can't just throw shit in a bucket, seal it up for 3 days and say like, this is what's hot. It's gold. Like, dude, it's not good. Like, it's not good. There has to be some objective measurement of quality here that's not just, this is interesting. And if it is interesting, that's fine, but let's just talk about how interesting it is and not say that it's delicate or nuanced or layered or complex or anything. It's just, yeah, beat me over the head with this thing and then leave me to die. Like, that's what it is. It's fun.
Sometimes. Yeah, I mean, I wonder if there's different ways of brewing these coffees that would make them a different experience, you know, like going outside of our generalized SCA stuff and see what happens. But that's going to be a whole nother world. And maybe make them taste more nuanced, maybe not. Maybe more of something or less of something else.
Well, I remember back in the day with some of those naturals, I would intentionally under-extract them.
For sure.
Because
like quick extraction.
In things like pour overs, it up dose it and just kind of hold the water back, because then you would get it, the end wasn't balanced, but you're able to extract all of that fruity tropical goodness,
the clean part,
and you leave some of that funk behind because you don't get anywhere near over extraction. So you get a cup that's wildly unbalanced. It's very alive, it's very bright, it's very juicy. It's definitely an experience, but with no funk. So, and you know, some people will be like, dude, this isn't balanced. I'm like, yeah, you're right, it's not,
but it's the best.
Intentionally so.
It's clean, juicy coffee.
It's like this sweet, delicious,
like,
thing.
Like that Alita.
And I don't,
back in the day.
Yeah. And that was cool. I like that. So there is some stuff to play with. I mean, you can't turn shit into sunshine, but you know, you can maneuver through what's happening.
I think for me, it's still, the problem is that it's almost 90% of the time it's going to be blueberry or strawberry. It's not the other fun stuff. And that's, I think, why I have more of an issue with naturals. There's the few awesome ones where you're like, that is more mango-y or something that's like unique to it. But I think that's my problem with it, is almost always it's going to be, that's your grape or that's your strawberry blackberry thing, you know, and it doesn't lead to a lot of complexity to me, when that's going to be the overarching flavor.
But then that's like the magic, is to like find.
Totally.
Right. That's what makes it special.
Yeah. Which is just, if I have to answer, that's why washed isn't going to be that, because I believe you're going to find more interesting things if you're able to, like, all variables the same. You're going to find more interesting thing in washed coffees for me. That was the question.
Yeah.
I mean, preference, I guess. That's, you also have to think about what you're drinking all the time.
I mean, you can give the shout out to the natural as like converting, you know, pre-specialty guests, you know, over to like specialty,
always.
And
I'm not a natural hater at all. And I think I've had some really interesting naturals that are complex. I remember way back in the day, Stumptown did no, that wasn't it. Anyway, there's been a few that are really, really good.
Well, I think Honey's are a place where you could get a lot of this stuff done well. If, you know, you still have to do a lot of work on it. And I think they take more. I mean, that's what they're trying to do with anaerobic stuff too. But I think you might be able to find some middle grounds where you get a little bit of this, that, and the other. It's all a lot of focus.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm totally down with the naturals. But if he's going to ask me what's my preference and why, that's my preference and why.
So you're claiming wash because more complexity, nuanced flavors.
I think so.
Yeah.
For me.
It's really kind of that pick your poison thing. It's always interesting to see what people coming from not coffee want to latch onto as these primary identifiers. So Zach's a trained sommelier.
Right.
So in wine, they're going with, you know, what's the primary? Like variety.
Sure.
Or whether, you know,
yeah,
whether right, it's terroir, like a Syrah or a Pinot or Zinfandel, like the type of grape is the primary. And for us, that's not it. It's more region specific. You know, we don't lead with Pacamara or Bourbon.
It would be awesome
or Catuai.
That would probably help with to what you're talking for me, Chuck, is like if it was variety specific first, then you could have some form of comparison. Like, this is Pacamara from all these different regions. That would get gangster. Harder to do though, because it doesn't always grow.
Well, I mean, it'll grow if we make it grow, right?
I think. Well, yeah, and I guess there's legalities to planting these things other places too. I think, but sometimes coffees don't do as well from what I'm hearing.
Sure.
You know, like different climates don't work for whatever reason.
Right. You wouldn't have to transplant anything. I'm just saying, as a culture, we would generally lead with this coffee. You know, is from a region in Guatemala.
Right.
Not this coffee is Bourbon.
Yep.
Or this coffee is Catoyi.
For sure.
And the wine people approach it from the opposite end, where they're kind of leading with this is Zinfandel from.
Mm-hmm.
Santa Cruz Mountains or from Napa. So it's always interesting to see how people see. And then there's all these other things like the processing method.
Mm-hmm. Skin on, skin off.
But, like I will say, we have a kind of like a great example of that coming up next year, where this year was the first harvest for like the Rosalio family that we work with in Guatemala, where we helped them plant some Java seeds.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Like three, 4 years ago, and this is the first harvest. So this is an example
That'll
of like
fun.
Cool tasting Java across origins. And I think Java is something that has like characteristics that you can taste across origins.
That
for
would
sure.
be super interesting. Yeah,
yeah,
Dulce, really fruity,
yeah,
fruit Dulce forward
said Java. When she was down there, said it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, what's the story with Java? Give the Java history.
Then straight into Mundo Novo next, please. And after that, some quick Margot Hipes.
Dude, my Java history is I just really enjoy it as a coffee. Well, I've had we've had Colombian Java before. And yeah, I just, again, find it as one of those varieties that really lends itself to like a washed complexity in the cup. Because I'm not too far from Jared, where it's like, dude, probably the coffees that I really enjoy are really complex, layered, where you can really get the layered flavors that are inherent in a washed coffee, where you're not using the process to kind of inherently create new flavors or to bolster what's there. It's like, I'm not too far from Jared and that being really what my favorite coffee is.
Yeah.
According to this, just some things that are neat is that Java is a high quality Central American variety that's tolerant to major diseases, and it requires low fertilizer.
Yeah, I think those are a few of the reasons that Luis Pedro, that was something that he was kind of recommending, because we were talking, kind of doing it in concert with him, is like what would work well for like the Rosalio family.
It works well at high altitudes, mid to high, and it's pretty close to resistant to, it's tolerant to leaf rust, which is great.
Yeah, and still has a cup quality. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm. And same with coffee berry disease. Cool. Yeah. About a 3-year production. Interesting stuff, guys.
I don't think we've ever had any, have we?
We might have one.
Yeah, we had one from Colombia a couple years ago.
Yeah,
but
right.
It was
in one of those like three,
yeah,
three
we did
different
that
unique
pack
coffees
of like kind of unique varietal varieties.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was yummy.
Yeah, so it was like some Sidra, some Java.
Yeah,
I think the Java was the most interesting. The
Tekasic,
yeah,
Tekasic, which I really like, but it was just really expensive.
Yeah,
and yeah,
we didn't have our storytelling up to par then either. We were just kind of letting it flounder.
Yeah, I mean it's an Ethiopian variety, and I mean, that's the rest of it's a long, long historical shenanigans that I don't think people are necessarily super interested in, but totally. Ethiopian, the Dutch, 19th century guys, you know. Brought by Cameroon, a local farmer from the Villamorin company.
Villamorin?
Yeah,
trade
acquired
into,
its seeds in Java from Porteres, a famous breeder, and then they brought it.
Famous breeder.
So on and so forth, yeah. 1980 to 1990. Released blah blah blah, so on and so forth.
So that
Java,
we'll wrap up Zach's question. We'll say that the closer you are to a wash process coffee, the more control you have over the processing, the more likely you are to be able to experience every single thing that that particular coffee has to offer. And then when you walk down that slope of going through the various types of honey processing all the way down to natural processing, you're by default going to be tasting more of the flavors that the processing injects into the coffee. So,
yeah, and I think for me what makes that loud too is that you can't as easily taste what people did to impart whatever in the roast process with naturals. That's, I think, what's tough for me is like you can kind of taste if it's out of its best balance, but because of the processing, you're not necessarily able to go, at least for me, and you could argue me if you want, if you listen to the podcast, but with Watch Coffee, I can more clearly decide what we'd like to pull out of it and find my way there. And I can do that with a natural, but it's almost more so always in the context of balancing out that flavor with everything else and whatever imparted changes to the inherent acidity and body and things that are coming because of that process. Like, that's what you're managing. You're not necessarily as much, in my opinion, crafting the experience in the roast in terms of the flavors that you can. I mean, you can argue that that's wrong because it's the same concept either way, but I think one thing is overshadowed.
Well, I hear what you're saying.
I would say that, yeah, just to what I was talking about earlier, it's like the more you have the injection of the processing method, the more the byproducts of the processing method dominate the flavor of the coffee.
Sure.
It's at the expense of something else.
Right, right.
So if you're thinking about it as an equalizer on an amplifier, if you're cranking all these things up, there's not a lot of room there to hear this balanced sound. You know what I mean? It's almost, or, you know, that could be an analogy, or it's just like, go ahead.
Think of like a natural Kenyan and like all the
I've only had like two.
I think there's probably a reason, like I'd say there's a reason we don't have a lot. It's like, there's so much complexity in a washed Kenyan coffee that you can do exactly like what you're saying within a roast and create it to what you'd be. Whereas like just this cloud of processing would be, you know, would be, I don't know, like impeding that work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, if you had like a really naturally processed.
Totally. On a cupping table, it would be much easier to pick out different varieties and different regions of washed coffees than it would be on a table of naturals. Like,
for
if you were
cupping
a table of washed coffees, you'd be like, oh, that's Pacamara for sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, this coffee's from Kenya for sure. This tastes like some, you know, this is from Antigua maybe, you know.
Yeah, this is the Java from Antigua. This is the Bourbon from Antigua.
That wouldn't
for
be
sure.
terribly difficult. But if you had that same situation with all naturally processed coffees, like you said, there'd be this cloud of natural wrapping around the whole thing. So where you're like, it tastes like some sort of dried fruit.
Yeah.
And then
what's behind all that?
Maybe it's Cachoeira. Maybe it's from Panama. With the exception of sometimes geisha, you can pop out. It has a specific taste.
Yeah.
Or at least the stuff from Panama that's
I think
like
geishas
the native
generally
shit,
do have
you know?
Some sort. There is some sort of like flavor you pick up after years of experience. You're like, that's something's unique about that coffee. That's really good. And usually it's like, oh, that was geisha. That's why.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think for me specifically, more the geishas of the past had it. And I think that's because you're getting, you know, the first geishas that I ever had were, of course, the stuff from Panama.
Esmeraldas.
Yeah, Hacienda Esmeralda, and then, you know, some of the stuff from Alita. They're all in that same area. And now it's been transplanted everywhere. Everybody's growing it. So where it used to be this beacon of quality and especially experience, now it feels to me like there's still a premium on the price, but a lot of the coffees are kind of watered down to where it doesn't really taste that special at all, because who knows, it might be a super young plant in some region where it doesn't really want to grow, and it just does, it doesn't offer that same je ne sais quoi, so to speak.
We're a little bilingual in
I'm
this
super
in case
French,
you guys
dude.
Wanted,
is that French?
We'll put it in the subtitles for you.
We can translate this.
Don't worry about it, Google.
Set your browser to closed captioned.
Google, yeah. Hey, Google. I mean, Zach, great question. I think you could technically, and I'm sure this is what anaerobic wants to be, but you could find your way to some sort of cleaner middle ground with something like an anaerobic too, but... And we have. We've seen it in some capacities.
You'd still be in the spectrum between honey and...
Yeah, it's still
however
like...
However far you own it. To bourbon barrel.
Yeah, dude. With a little, bourbon
really
barrel, a little cinnamon.
Really looking forward to bringing in a nice Kenyan bourbon barrel.
Bourbon barrel aged Kenya. Cask oak.
Cinnamon, dude.
Can you guys taste the unique...
Yeah. Sprinkle some cinnamon in it.
Oh, they've done it.
I know. I saw it. I was just like, fuck, dude. It made me so mad.
And then you drank it and you're like, it's my new favorite.
I was like, oh, this tastes like...
orange mocha frappuccino. It
tastes like a morning drive in Sausalito. Sun's coming up over the hill. Maybe I'll hit the freaking Golden Gate and do some like Danny Tanner vibe stuff. I don't know.
Guaranteed. I mean, I'm drinking our Arcon right now and I'm pretty happy with where it's going. And
nice.
It's, you know, real nice nuances in this coffee.
It is interesting to see now, more so than ever before, because the world's just gotten smaller, the connectivity's higher, there's more people connecting with producers, and it's more easy to do that, to see the impacts of the market on how people are processing coffee. Towards, you know, 10 years ago, there was baristas really loved naturals, and there was this big push for a lot of producers to do natural because, like, that's what's going to sell in the States. Like, that's what people want to drink. So people are switching over production. And now, like, as soon as this anaerobic craze hit, you see it just everywhere. And I have to imagine it's because of that faster feedback. It's like, hey, the market's going anaerobic. We got to get some of that going. Do you think that's a fair
play? I think it is. Hopefully we've seen the peak. I'm curious if we've seen the peak of anaerobic and it's coming back down the side of people experiencing it. And I think a lot of people, like myself included, being like,
Yeah.
I think the whispers on
and
like
it's kind of
that
coming
are
back
like,
down.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. But then I'm just saying, like, in terms of how trends are created and producers being not pressured is the right word, but getting that quicker market feedback. Like, what's the next thing? You know, we've got natural, we've got anaerobic. What's next?
I mean, it's sad. It's like, I almost say, just look to wine, right? All these things have already been done in wine.
Oh, where we got the natural wine thing.
Right. And I mean,
different kinds of skin contact.
You know, in a lot of the science talks, it's like, can different types of yeast or different types of bacteria influence what people are trying to bring out in the coffee in the same way they do that with wine in different places around the world? So I could see that being like the next, if I'm going to throw something out there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen some pretty, I've had one or two tasty coffees with some sort of yeast fermentation addition to it. But again, all this stuff just requires a lot of focus and intention. And I think maybe that's part of the issue is the coffee industry is asking producers to like do something that's like outside of their scope anyway.
Is that wouldn't feel comfortable asking, right? You're risking their...
Right. Like you have to
entire livelihood.
Right. It's like they've been using a certain yeast in their coffee, and then somebody from the outside that doesn't know their crop at all is going to come in and be like, we want you to try this specific yeast that may just fuck up everything that they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's R&D and all this stuff, and then there's got to be tests, and that's what R&D is. But like, you have to like,
thousands of tests.
How much will it cost? It's going to cost thousands to do this.
How much can they actually progress year after year, right? If you're only doing maybe two or three pickings on average,
I think it's just
you have that many chances to try something should you decide to and get whatever feedback it is. And again, that's all just based on that year.
And if you don't have a brand, it's even sketchier. So are some
absolutely
so like, some producers have a brand.
Yeah, like
right?
Like I think of like Juan Peña.
Sure.
Right?
Juan Peña.
It's like he's got the
Wilford
resources
Lamastis,
in the lab to do the research and to like little by little try different things.
Right.
But
even more than
maybe,
that,
some of them.
Yeah. Even if he makes some coffee that ends up being incredibly terrible, someone's going to buy it. You know what I mean?
His name and brand.
Because he's
Correct.
Juan Peña, And so there's a little bit of a safety net in that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure Wilford could sell whatever he wants to. You know, Ben Hameen could do whatever and probably still sell coffee. But if you're just breaking into this specialty market and want to try these things out and you're just a multi-generational, I've been farming this thing forever and it's super risky.
Yeah. It's not worth it.
It's hard, you know?
Totally. I mean, a lot of them aren't even comfortable moving into specialty that they want to, but they don't have anything to really bank on in terms of is it going to pay off, because it already costs them a lot of money to jump into specialty.
Yeah, and there's way more coffee
way more risk
than there are specialty coffee buy, like the capacity for specialty coffee can buy way less than obviously.
Yeah,
the amount of coffee out
right.
there, mm-hmm. which is why Pete's and Starbucks play such a integral role in buying those like mid to lower 80 point coffees.
Which I could see how that just feels like a nice safe bet.
Yeah.
Like, hey, totally. This is, I know someone's going to buy this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what it is.
Right. And I don't have to wait for it to all be peak and perfect and then hire all these pickers to make sure it all comes off at the same time. I can just kind of go out there and collect and collect and collect.
Yeah, it's a really interesting ecosystem we live in.
Yeah, because I mean, just from, I mean, like you talk about, Jared, like when I was working in Ethiopia, that just the Starbucks and Pete's did help producers go from commercial to that lower end of specialty.
Right.
Like that was changing people's lives because Pete's and Starbucks bought so much coffee and producers could go from conventional to Pete's and Starbucks, and that was a really significant like price increase for them, right? And
what is the differential
at
there?
Volume.
What do you think that's, you know, coming like from commodity grade to like the lower end of specialty? What's the
number
difference?
Know that like we had data in the program showing it was like their incomes were up like 100%.
Thousands
double,
of dollars.
Thousands.
So I mean, doubling incomes going
from awesome.
Commercial to like maybe the higher end of quality that Pete's and Starbucks. And Pete's was a little bit higher than Starbucks.
What was that requiring for them infrastructure-wise or quality-wise? Like, what are they changing? I'm sure it's different for everybody, but like one or two examples.
Yeah, I mean, so it's going from, right, so much bigger focus on processing, right? Like just getting into that specialty layer means, right, you need the higher quality depulper, you need the higher quality systems around washing mainly. That was part of what the program did was, right, was helping finance those kinds of costs and things, but there's still risk in that. Like, you know, there were tons of co-ops that succeeded and in huge ways, but there were also a few that didn't make it, right? It's like there is risk in taking on any kind of debt and financing, right?
Right, because it's not like Pete's or Starbucks is just gifting them with these pieces of equipment. They're like, hey, we'll loan you the money, you got to buy this, and then it gets paid out through the coffee over time. Or...
Yeah, and just for transparency, Pete's and Starbucks were purely coming in as the buyers. So Technoserve worked with other coffee exporting, importing entities who would provide the financing for the machines.
Right. Mm.
Because they really believed in the program, right? And they were just wanting to get repaid for providing the money up front for like all these Pinhales? I'm gonna butcher the name, but it's the Pinhales.
I don't know that one. That's not ringing a bell.
It's the washing.
Pinagos.
Pinagos.
Yeah,
from
yeah.
Brazil.
Yes. Yeah. Pinagos.
Yeah. So those were like the machines, putting the money up front for those machines, and then there was agronomic support and processing support from Technoserve to help them, you know, learn and continue that washing process over time to where the quality would be brought up into like the low to mid 80s.
Right. I'm hearing like investment and consistency, right? Yeah. With the washing and all of the processing portions. So it's like, okay, we can bank on consistency. We'll be the buyers. Technoserve is a nonprofit, right? So they're helping and then they're working with those.
Are they
exporters? And the exporters are going to make their money back by securing all that coffee to sell to.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
That was my next question. Are they connecting the dots once that quality infrastructure card starts to go in? So let's say you're a producer. Yeah.
That was their whole mission, was improving quality and quantity and then connecting producers who were previously underserved and kind of being taken advantage of within the system to specialty buyers in the U.S. and Europe.
And
they did a great job.
What was the place the Technoserve worked with? It was in Kenya. It started with a D that was pretty famous for a long while.
Oh, well, I mean, in Ethiopia, I mean, it's like Duramina.
Oh, that was it. Well, Duramina. No, there's another
Nanachala.
One, I feel like. No, okay, yep. Did they work in Kenya too, or no?
So Technoserve did work in Kenya, but it was a much smaller program. And I wasn't as familiar with.
Cool.
Because Kenya has its own system.
Different. Like a different branch.
Super gnarly.
Cool.
Right, through the marketing firm.
Duramina.
The Duramina, Nanachala.
I didn't know Nanachala was one. Got it.
Ucro.
Mm.
A lot of early Stumptown.
Madcap represent with Ucro,
yeah.
I remember that.
Stumptown, Madcap.
Right, we at Verve got the Duramina a lot. It's Stumptown, Duramina first, though, I think, right? Cool.
Yeah.
Yummy coffees.
Yeah, just to throw back into that.
Cool, man.
Okay, well, that's
a good history lesson. That's great. That's a good place to get into our meeting with.
Totally, guys.
Thanks for the question, Zach.
Hey, everyone. That's the podcast for the week. Thanks so much for listening. If you heard something that inspired you, let us know or tell a friend. These are the types of connections that are the most important to us and that we seek to create every day. If there's something you heard and you want to know more about, send us an email to podcast@catandcloud.com or head to our website, catandcloud.com/podcast, and let us know. While you're on our site, check out everything we have to offer. Dive deep into one of our single origin coffees or pick up a little treat for yourself. We have something for everyone, so check it out. Also, find us in the usual places, YouTube, Instagram. We're always there sharing amazing things. All right, that's it. Thanks, everyone, for being awesome. We'll be back next week.